Hey everybody, Marshall here. I hope you enjoy this episode where Rish and I finish up talking about 2014 Hercules movies. But what I really wanted to tell you up front here was I just uploaded to the Patreon page our next episode of Outfield Excursions where Rish and I talk about The Vast of Night. And it being the month of October, I thought it fit the theme very well. It's a very October-y kind of movie. So you can go over to patreon.com/journeyinto and check it out for just donating $1 a month. If you want to donate more, there's things like my new Star Trek podcast series and my Comics Cave series that I've started up over there on Patreon. And I like to throw extra things on there as well. But right now, I'll let you enjoy our take on The Legend of Hercules. Welcome, one and all, to another episode of the Outfield Excursions. Along the journeys and the side trips and the other paths that we cross and strewn things about, every once in a while we go on an excursion, and we always go on an excursion with Rish Outfield. So we couldn't do it without you, Rish.
Well, you may have to this episode, though. is this connected to the last movie, or is this its own episode?
I think we decided we talked enough last time about Hercules that we could make two separate episodes, and we can talk now about The Legend of Hercules, both having come out in 2014. This one was the one with the low Rotten Tomatoes score. And so I wasn't as excited to watch this one as I was Hercules with The Rock in it.
I hear you. Boy, this is going to be a bad one. We got to warn the people up front. Turn it off right now. Turn it off. Some of you still haven't listened to me. Turn it off. Yeah, if only you had like a English voiced AI that would come in and warn you, somebody maybe from the future that would tell you things.
Oh, yes.
That would be really useful, because it was 3 weeks ago tonight I watched this movie, and that's about 2.5 weeks too long for me to remember it.
And I think I watched it the week before.
Oh, really?
So
you watched it before I
yeah.
did? Oh, no.
But I always record the audio of these movies so that I can come back and use it when I'm producing the episodes. And so my intent was to listen through this movie in preparation for tonight, but I didn't have the opportunity to do that either. But I do remember a few things about it and some of the impressions that I had as I was watching it. So
okay, well that's good. But with a movie. Now, do you remember what the Rotten Tomatoes score was by any chance?
I don't remember. I think it was in the teens.
No. They wished it was in the teens. This has, believe it or not, a 3% on Rotten Tomatoes. And when I saw that, I was just like, oh no, this is either going to be torture, just like absolute torture, or this is going to be a ton of fun. When a movie is that bad, sometimes it passes over some kind of invisible threshold, like the international dateline when suddenly it's tomorrow. When a movie is so bad, sometimes it crosses all the way around and becomes good.
We should come up with our own score, the Sword of the Valiant score. How does it compare to the Sword of the Valiant?
Yeah. And so in the back of my mind, I thought this could be good for a laugh. This could at least be, it could make for a really good episode of our excursion show. But spoilers, sorry guys, there are always spoilers in these movies episodes. That was not the case. We'll go through the story of the film if you can remember it. But early on, Hercules and his brother, his half-brother, run into the Nemean lion. And it was, when it first shows itself, it was such an abominable special effect, such a terrible CG effect, that I actually sat up and clapped. I was like, oh no, this is going to be terrible. And I was smiling because I was like, oh, that's the kind of movie we just got ourselves into. And unfortunately, there was never an effect as bad as that lion through the whole rest of the movie. And I think that that scene is indicative of the rest of the movie because Thor, how many times have I called him Thor today? Hercules grabs the lion, puts his arm around it, and he sort of like chokes it to death with his bare hands. And it's very clear that the actor is not touching anything. He's just got his arms in the air and is pretending to hug something. But there's never anything as bad as that for the rest of the movie. And it's to the detriment of this movie and to the detriment of the review.
Yeah, I guess that would be similar to the snakes that we saw at the beginning of the other Hercules movie.
Oh, the CG snakes that are trying to kill the baby.
Right.
Well, those didn't look like nothing, which is what this lion looked like. But I think maybe it is the same problem, though. When they're trying to recreate something that exists in life, we're much less forgiving about it. When they're trying to recreate an animal or a snake or an insect and it looks fake. And worse than that, when they're trying to recreate a human being and it looks fake. That's so damning. I hate that in a movie where it's just like, that's not a person. But when it's a monster, when it's a spaceship, when it's an alien planet, when it's a gargoyle, when it's a, you know, like a giant building or something like that, I think my mind can just accept it in an easier way. Or maybe that sort of thing is just easier to do.
I think so. Yeah, definitely. If it's something that we can't recognize. Yeah, am I watching Hercules or am I watching Madagascar? Because that's almost as bad as the animation was at the beginning with the lion.
Let's go through the movie. First off, it was directed by Rennie Harlan. And I don't know if you're a big film fan, but Rennie Harlan was, at one time, a big movie director. He got his start with, I think, Nightmare on Elm Street 4. But then he did Die Hard 2 in 1990. He did a Sylvester Stallone movie called Cliffhanger.
Oh, yeah. I remember Cliffhanger.
His, whatever the opposite of a claim to fame is, was a movie called Cutthroat Island in 1995. Rennie Harlan was married to Gina Davis, and he did this huge budget pirate movie called Cutthroat Island that cost just a ton of money. And nobody wanted to make it because traditionally pirate movies were box office poison. And Cutthroat Island is not the exception to the rule. It is the rule. It's the biggest of those box office poison pirate movies. And it really derailed Gina Davis's career. She did do another movie for her husband before that marriage fell apart called The Long Kissed Goodnight, which I thought was really good. It was her and Samuel L. Jackson, but it didn't do well. And eventually Rennie Harlan just went away. He did Deep Blue Sea was like the last hit movie he had. And it was the one with the hyper-intelligent sharks that were so intelligent when somebody dumped wine into the ocean, the sharks thought that it was blood. And I was just like, guys, a real shark wouldn't do that. Let alone an intelligent as a person shark. But anyhow, sorry. His career just went down the toilet, really. And Legend of Hercules did not help with that.
No.
It was a bomb. It had a fairly low budget for a fantasy film, but it didn't make its money back. And so I guess we can talk about the story. I just wanted to talk a little bit about Renny Harlin. He was a talented guy, but...
Yeah, I'm glad you recognized him and had some of that history, because as I looked through the director and the writers and all the stars of this, I knew nobody. I was like, wow, where did they get half of this cast? Did they just go to Norway or something like that? Or there's a lot of Scandinavian type names in the cast list. So I didn't recognize anybody. So that was another reason I thought, wow, this probably isn't going to be a very good movie.
Yeah. So the main actor who plays Hercules, and I'm going to stammer every single time because I don't know if you noticed, but I noticed that his name was actually Heracles. And every time somebody said his name, it was dubbed over to be Hercules, which shouldn't bother me, but it bothered me because that's the whole plot point, is to honor Hera, the goddess. They call him Heracles.
Right.
But anyhow, the guy that plays this demigod is Kellen Lutz, and he's got the worst name. Kellen Lutz is, imagine if a Ken doll came to life and you just you stuck the Ken doll's head on a He-Man action figure and that came to life. His claim to fame, so to speak, was he was one of the Cullen brothers in the Twilight movies, but he wasn't right. The Cullen brother, that Edward Cullen, the one that everybody knows, he was one of the others. And he's American and forced to do an English accent in this movie. And oh man, he really struggles, but he's not bad enough to be hilarious or to be fun in the movie. Do you know what I mean?
I do, yeah.
Like, there's a couple of times when like his English accent is so off that you're like, oh, guy, is that how the English sound to you? But the rest of the time he's fine. And so it's just, darn it. I wish he had been a little worse, and I wish the film had been a little worse, because it would have been more fun to watch. He was the only, you know, actor that I had heard of besides Jonathan Schaech, who is uniformly terrible in this movie. And Jonathan Schaech plays like he's the slave owner or something like that, or he's the assassin that the king has hired to kill his son. And Jonathan Schaech was in That Thing You Do, Tom Hanks's directorial debut, when he was young, and everybody was saying this is going to be a new, you know, one of those, he's going to be a superstar. But he never was. He never had the fame repeat that he had in being in That Thing You Do. And from that point on, he only plays bad guys. He's just got one of those faces where you kind of want to punch it. I believe his mom used to say that. Jonathan, I just turn away because I just want to punch you right now. So those were the two actors that I had recognized. And then everybody else I had to look up. And I'm sorry, I know you want to say something. I can just be quiet if you wanted to talk.
Well, just with Kellen Lutz, you know, I had never heard of him at all. He didn't look familiar. I didn't recognize him from anything. And so I watched the movie.
Well, that was your first mistake.
Yeah, that was the first mistake. But it was kind of like, you know, when you buy a car and then you notice all the other cars that are like yours, they just start showing up. Oh, I didn't wreck it. Oh, that's the same car I have. It was kind of like that with Kellen Lutz. I watched the movie by myself because nobody else wanted to watch it. And then the next day I come home from work and my wife is watching TV, and she likes to watch a lot of, you know, detective shows and mystery shows and lawyer shows and, you know, the kind of stuff that the reason we got CBS All Access was so she could watch those shows. And I watch them occasionally as well. She's watching a show and I just kind of start watching with her. I'm like, hey, that's the guy. That's Hercules right there. She's like, what do you mean? I said, the movie I watched last night, he played Hercules. and she was watching FBI Most Wanted, which is a CBS show, and I guess it's a spinoff of FBI or something like that. So it's kind of like CSI had all those shows. It's kind of one of those types. And so I started watching. I'm like, you know, he's not actually that bad in this show. So maybe he's grown a little bit. But I guess all in all, he wasn't, like you said, he wasn't terrible in this movie either. But then I was talking about him and my daughter, who over this coronavirus quarantine area had discovered the Twilight series. She borrowed a couple books from a friend and read the entire Twilight saga. And then she wanted to watch all the movies. And so she's been watching all the movies. And she goes, oh, yeah, he's whatever, Cullen in the Twilight movie. And I watched the first Twilight movie with her. And I said, oh, really? Where was he? I didn't see him. And she tried to explain who he was. And I said, oh, I don't know. I don't remember that. But yeah, so the day after watching Hercules, or The Legend of Hercules, this Kellen Lutz is showing up in all these shows. And I thought that was kind of funny that all of a sudden, now that I've watched this movie, now I'm recognizing him everywhere I look. But yeah, maybe we should go through the plot of this movie a little bit now. Oh, did you want to say anything else before we move on?
I did want to talk more about the cast, but we can talk about the story, and I'll tease it. There were two people in the movie that were good. And I wish that they hadn't been, because it would have made the movie more fun to talk about. But yeah, as we go along, I want to talk about those two.
Okay. Well, so it starts out with this great battle, you know, big 300 type battle, you know, all these Grecian armies fighting against each other. And then this King Amphitryon, is that how you would say that? He challenges the other king to a one-on-one match.
My sword against yours.
Victor takes all. This city, all mine. Its army, riches, subjects, all. Not another soldier will die.
I could do to replenish my ranks. What say you, most brave and merciful king of Argos?
Will you spare these men?
King Amphitryon, I accept your challenge. Prepare to die.
And then he ends up killing the other king. I believe they're fighting Argos or something like that. And he kills the other king, and he gains the respect of the other army and becomes the king of all these people in Argos. And his queen, Queen Acmene, when she married him, didn't realize how bloodthirsty he was and how, what a terrible guy he was.
They never do, Marshall. They never do.
You gotta suck him in, right? And so she didn't want to be in this marriage anymore. She didn't want to bear him a son and continue on this legacy of bloodshed and warmongering. And so she prays. She's a faithful woman and prays to Hera for guidance and direction. And Hera appears to her. And I can't remember the name of the guy who's kind of like her priest or her...
Chiron, I think, is her assistant or her holy man.
Okay. Chiron. He witnesses this where Hera comes to Alcmene.
Hera accepts your gift. Goddess Hera! Queen Alcmene, approach.
Majesty, no.
Closer. Let me look upon you. You will have your deliverer, another son you shall bear.
No. Please, not by this man. Please, goddess.
Tell me, would you betray your king as my king betrays me in his lust for you? Would you have his mortal son to quell your sorrow and bring peace to this land? Would you bear the son of Zeus?
For the sake of peace, I would.
Then for the sake of peace, I shall permit it. Name him what you wish, but I shall know him as Hercules.
Hercules.
And they kind of go into where she's on in her bed, and you don't see Zeus. It's an invisible force, but she's obviously pleased with the experience of conceiving Hercules. And of course, the king doesn't know. He thinks somebody else is with her and is very upset. And when she becomes pregnant, he knows it's not his, and he resents that she's having a son by somebody else. And then I think at that point, that's kind of like the little prelude. And then, of course, it fast forwards to many years in the future.
Yeah, like 20 years later.
And then he's not called Hercules by other people.
No, I think it's like Alcides or something like that.
Alcides, yeah. And he is a prince of the kingdom. And the first scene that we see him is he's with his girlfriend or lover or whatever you want to say. And she's a princess from another kingdom. And they're together at this waterfall and pool area away from all the rest of the people. And he's jumping off the cliff to impress her. And, you know, they're kissing in the water. And she gives him this necklace. And I never could quite determine. I mean, it was an important necklace to her. It was given to her by her mother or something like that. And she gives it to him as an oath to her love for him. But to me, it looked like a little piece of dog poop or something. I didn't know if it was supposed to be a god symbol or something like that or whatever. But anyway, and then they're interrupted by his half-brother.
Iphicles.
Iphicles.
Is that right? Am I saying it right?
I would think so, yeah. Again, not having seen the movie very recently, we're just going to have to go with what we got.
Okay, well, describe, if you will, in two words. Give me two words to describe Iphicles. And they're evident right there in this first scene.
Sniveling and jealous.
Okay, well, there you go. Yeah, they give us no reason to like him from the very, very beginning. It's so heavy-handed. What a jack... let's see, what's a good word? Okay, he's not an effective bad guy because he's so weak. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's not, you know, like a rival or something like that. He's just this little snake in the grass, you know, and he doesn't even have that sense of superiority like Loki would. You know, he's just soft, I guess you could say, but very undercutting to Alcides or Hercules. And then, you know, he says, you know, we need to get back. They're looking for the princess, and so they're all going back to the castle. But Iphicles and Hercules get attacked at some point by the Nemean lion. And again, I guess spoilers, we talked about how these movies came out in the same year, and they have some very common elements, and this Nemean lion, you know, was a big... We didn't see the scene where he fought the Nemean lion, but they talked about it as one of the feats. And he wore, you know, the rock in Hercules wore the pelt of the Nemean lion as a trophy and a sign of his strength. And so here in this movie, I guess we have to have the Nemean lion as well. And we'll talk about another scene later on, which is very similar to what we saw in the other movie. But like you said, Hercules, they try to throw spears at it, and the spears just break because of the strength of the lion or the durability of his skin or whatever. And so Hercules wrestles the lion down to the ground and chokes it and kills it. But when they go back to the castle, Iphicles takes credit that he killed the lion. And for some reason, Hercules just lets him take credit for it, even though, you know, he wanted to run away and was scared, and Hercules did all the effort. And then I think it's at that point where the king announces that there's been an agreement between two kingdoms, Crete and Argos, and he announces the wedding of Iphicles to Hercules' girlfriend, which I think her name is Hebe, and she's the princess of Crete. And so she doesn't want anything to do with that, and she runs away, and Hercules runs after her, and Prince Iphicles just doesn't know what to do about that. His dad says, well, go after them, go after her. And, you know, you can tell he wants his real son, to take over the kingdom and be the king, but at the same time, he's kind of disgusted by how weak he is and how useless he will be. So they're going to run away together and get away from Argos and the whole kingdom and just live their lives together. But they do get captured and brought back. And then the king wants to get rid of Hercules because he knows that him and this princess are lovers, and to make it possible for his son to be married and make this all work. And because he doesn't like Hercules at all, he sends him off to a war or to a battle in Egypt.
I understand you're having some trouble with the arrangements we've made.
Your arrangements? You may find spoiled by the next harvest moon.
I think not. You sail to Egypt tomorrow. There's been a revolt in Heliopolis, north of the Nile River Delta. You will enjoy war, Alcides, and you will forget all this. I certainly don't fear for your survival. May your mother's gods be with you, if they be at all. Ask him about Hebe. One final thing. Your brother here seems obsessed with the thought that you've taken the girl's maidenhood. Why don't you reassure him that's not the case?
Certainly I shall. I assure you, brother, it's none of your business.
And he even tells the leader of this army that he's only going to let him take half of his army. He can't even take the full army, I guess, to prove his greatness or whatever. But really, just because he's leading them into this ambush, he's made a deal with the Egyptians or whatever to deliver his army into their hands. And so that's what happens. They get ambushed in Egypt. And I think this is where your favorite guy comes in. Where they destroy everybody but Hercules and this leader of the army. And it's going to look up the name of the leader of the army.
I want to say that it's Sotiris.
Yeah, Sotiris.
And he's a good guy.
He is.
He explains to the king, you know, that he's trying to do the best that he can, but he can't win this battle with only half the men that he was promised. And the king, you know, tells him, are you questioning my orders? And he's just like, oh, no, I wouldn't do that. You know, I live to serve, but I just, you know, I worry that then he and Hercules sort of become friends because Hercules can see that this is one of those soldiers that cares about his people, the people under his command.
Right.
But yeah, they are ambushed, and it's all a deal that the king has made to get Hercules eliminated. And all that is left are those two, but back to back they're able to defeat these guys, or?
Almost. I mean, they put up the strongest effort, but the Egyptian army just kept coming and coming. They were in this gorge, kind of trapped in there, and as many people as they killed, the army just kept coming and coming. And finally, the leader of the Egyptian army said, stop. You know, he saw how strong and cunning these warriors were. And he was supposed to kill them, but he wanted, since they were so strong, he wanted to sell them into slavery and make some profit from it, and they kind of encourage him, yeah, let's do that. And they point to somebody else. You know, he says, who is the son of the king? And they point to somebody who's dead and say, that's him, that's it. And so they take his helmet to the king of Argos and let him know that we've killed his son. And so, of course, at that point, if it wasn't obvious beforehand, Hercules and Sotiris knew that they had been set up to be killed. And so, they get sold off into slavery, and the slave owner that purchases them, I guess, is the leader of these gladiator-type fights where people can, you know, bet on the winner of the fight. And, you know, very typical kind of scenario there. Of course, you know, Hercules proves himself to be one of the strongest fighters there. Now, this is all, he doesn't realize his divine heritage. I think his mother tells him he is before he goes off to Egypt. You know, she says, no, you are the son of Zeus. And he doesn't want to have anything to do with that, doesn't believe her, thinks she's lost her mind or whatever. And so, you know, he's doing all these great things, but he doesn't realize where his strength comes from and hasn't really received all of his strength either. And so, you know, he becomes the best fighter in the gladiator pits, but and Sotiris does a good job as well, and they kind of convince the slave owner that they need to go to Greece and fight in this huge arena battle. I think the deal is, if they take on six of the greatest gladiators and win, that they'll get their freedom and be able to go on their way. And that this whole time, he has 3 days to get back to Argos.
3 months.
Oh, 3 months.
Three moons.
Okay, that's right. It's been a while. So yeah, he has 3 months to get back before
the wedding.
His brother marries his girl before the wedding, right?
And it's this ticking clock that they mention early, early on. And then it seems like just years go by, but they keep reminding you, no, it's only 3 moons. Yeah, it was the hardest part to swallow of the whole movie, was that all of this happened in 3 months, that he becomes this star of the gladiatorial arts, and everybody cheers for him, and then they go to Greece to fight in like the Olympics of gladiatorial combat.
I think, if I remember correctly, Sotiris is injured, and so he's not going to be able to, but you know, they've sworn this oath to each other that they're going to escape together, that they're going to go back together and fight. So, you know, the slave owner's like, well, you're no good. You know, this deal isn't going to work out. And Hercules convinces him. Oh, and he does take on the name of Hercules at this point, even though he hasn't acknowledged his divine heritage. He does take on the stage name, I guess you could say, of Hercules, because he doesn't want people to know who he really is. And so, anyway, he convinces the slave owner that he'll, by himself, take on these six people in the big gladiator battle. And it was really interesting to me that the battle where Sotiris gets injured, when they were just fighting two other people in this other gladiatorial area, was a more exciting fight to watch than the one where Hercules takes on the six other people all by himself. Because he just pretty much takes care of business and kills them all pretty quick. And it just seems like really super easy for him to do when they get to the big arena, where the other battle, like I said, was a lot more compelling and had, you know, more things to be worried about and keep track of. And then when Sotiris gets injured, he has to go, because I think they're fighting two other people for that, and whoever wins is going to go to this big thing in Greece. I don't know, did you feel that way too, or did it all kind of blur together for you?
Well, it blurred a little bit, but yeah, it's so easy, that fight with him versus the six guys.
And they're supposed to be the best of the best.
Whereas, yeah, it is more perilous, this fight where Sotiris is hurt. And maybe that's part of it, is because somebody actually gets hurt, you go, oh, there are consequences to this fight. Whereas the other one, it's just a breeze. But you know, it is a breeze just how easy Hercules has it getting back to the kingdom and getting his freedom. I guess maybe that's how it actually happened. I'm making quotes in the air. You know, the actual legend is because his father was Zeus, you know, nobody could really stand a chance against him. But it's really hard when the deck is that stacked, not against your character, but in favor of your character.
Yeah.
To have there be drama and have there be consequences.
So I guess to try to finish this out, so, you know, he does win his freedom and Sotiris is as well. And so they go back to Argos and they start to work behind the scenes to build up their own army and to take away the army of the king and, you know, expose the king for the things that he's done and to build up their own resistance. But word gets back to the king and to Iphicles, so they're looking for who is this Hercules, because they don't know, realize that it's what was the name we said it's called?
Alcides.
Alcides. They think that he has been killed. The ruse worked there. And so Iphicles finds Sotiris's son and family and threatens to kill them unless he leads them to where Hercules is. And they do lead him to Hercules, and then he's shocked, and both him and the king are shocked and horrified that Hercules is their other brother. And so they do their most to discredit him, and they chain him up to a wall and mock him and I think beat him up a little bit in public and, you know, say, this is the man you wanted to fight for. This is the man you believe in, this Hercules. Well, he's only, you know, the guy that you've known all your life. And look at how weak and pathetic he is. I think, oh, and then doesn't Iphicles kill the priest at that point?
He does. I don't know that it matters, but he does, yes.
Well, to us it doesn't matter, but to Hercules that was kind of the last straw that he would kill this holy man or whatever in public, because he knows that...
I take it back. There was a scene that you didn't describe where the princess knows that she has to marry the prince, who is a tool, and she goes up on the roof to kill herself.
Oh, right.
And the priest convinces her not to do it, and he actually steals her away and reveals to her that Hercules is still alive and that they can be together.
Right, that's right.
And that, you know, that there is a reason to continue, to go on, to keep fighting. And so that made the priest a significant character, that he did that.
There you go. It does kind of work. And I also didn't mention how while Hercules was gone, the king found out that the boy was the son of Zeus and how all that happened. And he ends up killing Hercules' mother with her own dagger. She was going to try to kill the king, but he ends up killing her. And so I think he reveals that at this point too. And so Hercules, or he probably found out before. But anyway, this is the moment where Hercules finally acknowledges, or what would you say, accepts and calls out to Zeus and says, I believe in you. I believe that you are my father. Give me your power so that I can escape. And at that point, you know, the power comes to him and he tears down the chains off the wall and he kills everybody, all the army and everything. But of course, the king and his brother escape, and because he's got to fight them in the final scene. So now he has the power of Zeus and the full power of Hercules, and he amasses the army, and they go against the king, and they're fighting, and he becomes the superhero at this point. He has a chain, I think, and he... No, it's a regular sword. And he holds it up in the air and again calls on the power of Zeus, and lightning comes down from the sky and lights upon this sword, and then he swings it around and it's like this big, you know, whiplash whip thing from Iron Man, and he's just wiping people out, wiping the army out so they can get into the castle and he can go kill the king. But once he's in there, and once him and the king are fighting against each other, he says, "No, I'm not going to use any of my demigod powers. I'm going to fight you one-on-one as a man," or whatever.
"Have you come to bring the wrath of Zeus upon me, boy?"
"No, I come to you as a mortal, to bring the wrath of Alcides upon the tyrants who killed my mother.
Come at me, boy, and learn why I am the slayer of kings. Come!"
And I don't know, I just thought that was kind of stupid. They could have done something. I mean, I guess it makes sense. They don't want it to be such a overpowered battle where Hercules is just going to kill him outright, but... it just, I don't know, it seemed kind of lame at the same time. And so, yes, they fight, and it is even-handed there for a while, but eventually Hercules does kill the king. Now, I can't remember, though, what happened with the brother, with Iphicles.
Okay, so Hercules is fighting with his stepfather, and he's winning. And the son, his brother, grabs the princess, and he puts a blade, like a dagger or whatever, at her chest. And he says, you know, "Let my father go or I'll kill the girl." And so Hercules hesitates, and the princess grabs the knife and sticks it through herself.
Right.
And it comes out her back. And into the prince, killing him, but not injuring her. And then Hercules has no reason to let the king go. So he kills the king with the same knife that the king killed his mother with.
Which is only fitting.
And so Hercules runs over to the princess's side and he's like, "Oh no, you know, don't die." And she closes her eyes and we go, "Oh wow, she really did kill herself to save Hercules." That's really... And then that fades back in and it's 9 months later and she's had a baby and she's fine. She was okay. She recovered, I guess. But that's the final scene, I think, of the movie, is now Hercules and the princess have a child together. And if you want to imagine Barbie and Ken having a child together, that's what the kid probably will grow up to look like.
Yeah. So, you know, it had some bad moments and some not great acting. But all in all, when I was done with it, I had to say or think, this wasn't that bad of a movie. I wasn't horrified by it. There were parts of it that I thought were good. I don't think a 3 Rotten Tomato score, I wouldn't call it that bad. That's bottom of the barrel kind of stuff. Maybe the Arnold Schwarzenegger Hercules movie would deserve a 5 rating, but not this one.
Is that something that's available that we could watch? That one's called Hercules in New York, right?
Yeah, I saw that as I was looking at stuff. I don't know if it's available or not. We might have to come back to that one. But you had said there were 2 actors that you felt were good in this movie.
I did, and they elevated the movie, but I didn't want it to be elevated. It's just, like, every time you'd see Kellan Lutz's face, it was, like, so puffy and expressionless. he's not good. And then the girl that played the princess, she's like a French supermodel or something like that. And I was frustrated because she was good. And like, she delivered her lines and I'd be like, dang, I believed that. I don't know if she's French or if she's Polish or what she is. But then even worse, the king, this guy Scott Adkins that I had never even heard of, but I had to look him up, was so good. Beyond like the level of a turd like this deserves. He was excellent. And he did like all of his own stunts and his own fighting. And I was just like, what is the deal with this guy? He looked like Henry Cavill, the modern Superman with a beard.
Right. And that's true.
He does like all this fighting at the beginning when he's supposed to be young. And then, of course, he fights Hercules at the end of the movie. And I looked and he has done a ton of like Hong Kong movies. Anytime they need an American guy, you know, a Westerner to fight Jackie Chan or Sammo Hung or, you know, one of the other Donnie Yen, you know, one of those guys, they bring in this Scott Adkins guy. And my cousin actually knew who he was because he likes Kung Fu movies. And he played like one of Caecilius's evil guys in Doctor Strange. But oh. I didn't recognize him. He was really good. He's an English actor. And so, of course, his English accent is strong. I believed him. And I hated that. I hated that he wasn't like this terrible embarrassment like the main bad guy, the prince, was. Where it's just like every scene he's on the screen, you're like, oof. Anyhow. That was too bad. It made me want to look up this Adkins guy and see like maybe a movie that he stars in, because he impressed me.
Yeah, he was kind of fun to watch, and but he was quite over the top though.
But he was over the top in an entertaining way, where it's like, I don't know, like if you ever saw, what was the name of the guy who played Belloc in Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Oh.
Freeman, I want to say. Is his name Paul Freeman?
Sounds right.
He played the bad guy in the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie. And I worked at a video store when that came out, and we would play it from time to time. And every time he was on screen, I'd be like, dang, dude. Somebody needs to tell him that this is a turd. And you don't have to work this hard. But anyhow, that's just how I felt with him in this movie. He was really good.
Now, there was one scene where I liked the brother character, or at least I felt something for him. And I thought it was a good scene. It was between him and the queen. And it was after Hercules had been killed. Or they thought he had been killed. And of course she was mourning for him and all this stuff. And there's this little scene between them where he's like, you have another son as well.
Mother? Are you sick, Mother?
Do I seem so?
Often. At the sight of me.
This is foolish talk. You are my son.
The one who is living. Yet I feel more absent than the one who is not.
Iphicles, we are both grieving.
But in this sea of grief, there must be a drop of felicitation. I am to be wed 3 moons hence.
Yes. You are right. You have won yourself a fine bride.
Some bride, yes, but have I won a wife?
She will serve you well.
Is this my hope? Mother, how do I win her as my father won you? Please, I am not Alcides. I know that to her or to you.
Your father won me, but for a moment which passed so fast I cannot remember it. This is what you will have with Hebe. This is what has come of it. A marriage that she does not want. And the death of your brother.
And, you know, I just started thinking about it from his point of view. all his life growing up, knowing that his mother loved Hercules more than him, you could kind of get where maybe some of that bitterness came from, and some of, you know, I didn't necessarily feel sorry for him, but I thought that was a good scene establishing their relationship and kind of understanding things maybe a little bit more from his perspective. But that was about it for him. One of the other things I liked, or I maybe it's the other movie that we watched, the other Hercules movie, you know, was very much, you know, there are legends about Hercules, but those are mainly just stories. And he has this team of adventurers that they accomplish all these things together, but they build up the story around him. This movie really hooks into the god aspect of it, you know, the demigod, you know, the son of Zeus kind of thing, and into the pantheon stuff. And that was a different flavor for this movie. And I, as I was watching it, I kind of felt like Hercules was playing Joseph of Egypt, you know, where everything bad happens to him, but he always makes the best of it. You know, he's sold into slavery to Egypt, but he becomes the best slave, and he becomes friends with the slave owner or whatever, and gets privileges that other people don't. And then, you know, he's a gladiator, and he becomes the best gladiator, and that kind of thing. So it kind of almost felt like a biblical type thing with that storyline going on. And of course, you know, it's all talking about the supernatural and about deities. And so, of course, that's going to be in there. But I thought that was interesting and kind of fun. I don't think it made it a better movie, but.
Okay. Well, did you ever see Gladiator? Ridley Scott's 2000 Gladiator?
I have not seen the whole thing.
Well, the filmmakers behind Legend of Hercules saw it. Because about an hour of this movie is Gladiator.
Okay.
Like point for point. And there's even like a scene where he's talking to his slave owner who loves gladiatorial combat. And he's telling him about his former life. And I don't know. It was so, so close. Except for compacted into 3 months. But, you know, the part with the sword where the lightning hits the sword and now the sword can shoot lightning was kind of fun.
It was.
You know what I mean? It just, a lot of times they're embarrassed by the source material. And I guess maybe that's always the case with movies like this. Like, I remember when Noah came out with Russell Crowe and Emma Watson, they were embarrassed by the source material of that movie. Like when they did Troy, the movie with Brad Pitt. They did away with all references to like the Greek pantheon and that there were gods and like Achilles had not been dipped and had an Achilles heel. It was just, you know, he was a good fighter and nobody could beat him because he was a good fighter. And I missed that. I missed the gods being part of that story. It felt like you weren't telling the story right.
Yeah.
And so, even though I don't think we ever see any of the gods in this movie, they are clearly there. And
oh, we do see Hera, I guess.
We do?
Yeah, she's the woman that comes to the queen at the beginning and says, "I'll allow Zeus to come to you, and because he lusts after you, and you'll bear a son, but please call him Heracles."
Well, I guess that's where Heracles came from. So
right.
Definitely the gods are active.
Was there anything else that stood out to you as far as good points or terrible points?
No, the action scenes were well done enough that I didn't just roll my eyes, but they weren't good enough for me to be like, oh, I recommend this movie. And the special effects, there were lots of like CG armies and stuff, but they weren't bad enough for me to think, whoa, this is terrible. Or weren't good enough for me to say, wow, they really, really did a good job with that. It's just the whole movie is sort of middle of the road. Not good, but not awful, and definitely not a 3%. on Rotten Tomatoes. Like, if you and I mentioned, like, the worst movies we've ever seen, like Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance or something like that, I'm sure they have higher Rotten Tomatoes scores than 3.
Yeah. One thing, I don't know if it was Rennie Harlan or the cinematographer or whatever, but somebody really liked the visual effect of, like, cottonwood things floating through the air at a water scene. You know, we started out with that scene with Hercules in the pool and the waterfall, and there was all these pollen or whatever it was floating across the air, and it just showed up like 2 or 3 other times in there. I'm like, man, somebody really likes the way that looks, and they really want to catch that on camera for some reason.
What we may need to see if Hercules in New York is available, because that was, I was surprised, that was 1970. I had no idea Schwarzenegger was that old to be the lead actor in a movie 12 years before Conan.
Well, be careful, you know, we might not consider him an actor after we watch the movie, but yeah, that would be interesting to watch. Maybe we'll have to come back to that one. I may have had my fill of Hercules for a while.
Okay, that's fine.
But I'm not striking it off the list, that's for sure. I think it'd be fun to watch.
Do you have another movie that you think we should maybe hit up next?
Well, we've talked about a couple of them, and they're really recent movies. I'm really intrigued. Amazon Prime came out with a movie called The Vast of Night, and it's done in like an old Twilight Zone fashion, and it's a period piece from the 50s or whatever. That looks really good, and I'd really like to watch that. Whether we do it for this show or not, I'll probably watch it. But I haven't watched it yet because I figured if we do it for this show, then I'll just wait so we can watch it around the same time. You had mentioned a movie, and I since we've talked about that, I actually watched it with my family.
You're kidding.
No.
You watched Artemis Fowl?
Artemis Fowl, yeah. So I've seen it, and I could watch it again, I guess, for this show. So either of those two, I think we should tackle next.
I did want to watch Artemis Fowl, that's for sure. And I guess if you've already watched it, then it gets a leg up over Vast of Night.
Yeah.
But I would have to watch it soon so we don't repeat tonight's performance.
Well, I could probably, that's on Disney Plus, and it's not something that I'd have to rent again or get from the library. So yeah, let's do that. Let's do Artemis Fowl next.
Okay. As always, folks, if you're still listening, I'm sorry. But beyond that, if there's a movie that you would recommend us checking out, let us know. I would prefer something that we're really, really going to like that we wouldn't have seen otherwise, or something that is really, really bad, but in a fun way. So
yeah. Yeah. We're definitely up for ideas. You can call on the voicemail line at 77JN2107. Or you can send an email at journeyintopodcast@gmail.com. And if you didn't want to call the voicemail line, but you wanted to send us some audio, you can email that in an MP3 file. As long as it's not too long, it should work in an email. And yeah, if you want to get some extra stuff and support the Journey Into podcast more, you can go over to patreon.com/journeyinto and look at the different options there. The lowest there is $1 a month. Love to have you support the podcast over there. You can also go to patreon.com/rishoutfield and support Rish over there on Patreon. He'd appreciate that as well. So lots of different ways to interact with us here. Journey Into's on Facebook and Twitter as well. So we try to stick around the PG-13 rating for what we watch for this show. But yeah, send your suggestions to us. We'd appreciate it.
Okay, well, I think that's it. Thanks for remembering some of the movie and for talking to me about it.
Yeah, I think this is kind of fun. You know, this was a Patreon poll, so the Patreon members there did get to decide what movies we would talk about. Initially, we had planned to do both Hercules movies in one episode, but the way our schedules worked out and the length that we've spent talking about the movies, we decided to split it into two. Thanks, and we'll see you next time. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Have you come to bring the wrath of Zeus upon me, boy?
No. I just wanted to say that this podcast was produced under the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License.
You will enjoy war, Alcides, and you will forget all this. I certainly won't fear for your survival.
Okay, it's Marshall. And that means that as long as you don't try to sell or change the audio from this podcast, you can share it with whoever and in any way you wish.
May your mother's gods be with you, if they be at all.
Right. Also, let people know where the audio came from. Thanks for listening to this podcast.
Come at me, boy, and learn why I am the Slayer of Kings.
I'm getting out of here.
Hercules, in certain ways, is almost like a kind of a worn-out symbol of strength. People picture this kind of a huge muscle guy who just goes around lifting huge things and doing superhuman deeds. But we really wanted to break that mold and introduce to the audience Hercules as a young man who is conflicted with who he is, and who has to come to terms with the fact that his father indeed was a god and that he has these supernatural powers. When I really started researching it all, it made me realize that every superhero in comic books, in literature, in stories and music and theater and Shakespeare and today's heroes in movies, they are really all based on Hercules, whether it's Superman or Batman or Spider-Man. All those myths and stories and ideas of heroism and superheroism really come from Hercules. He was the ultimate superhero.
How was that? Was that big enough?
No, that was great. It was perfect.